Hello, Internet, and welcome back to Old Geek, Young Geek. I am Scott, I am the Young Geek, and with me, as always, is Steve, the Older Geek.
I'm Steve Johnson, and I am so old, I've been playing video games since before Kendrick Lamar was born. I got a different one every week. That's my thing.
Okay,
for the Old Geek, Young Geek thing. Different age right. Joke every week.
Okay, so this is episode 4, and we're going to talk about sequels in games.
Yes, we are. Sequels in games.
Yep, that's kind of a thing that happens like all the time with like every franchise ever.
I know.
So, yeah, we'll talk about that later, but first, the news.
So, the big news.
Yeah, the big news that I've found out.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
All right, so the news that I found out about this week, one of the major topics, was Nintendo is now having mobile games, games on your smartphone, which is a really big deal for them.
Yeah, definitely.
And the thing is, though, that it's just Nintendo properties, as in, like, Nintendo characters and such, like, in mobile games. It's actually being made by a company called DNA, D, capital D, little, lowercase e, capital N, capital A. They make a lot of freemium games.
You can tell they're a quality company because of how they capitalized their name.
Yes, of course. That's professionalism. They make a whole bunch of free-to-play and freemium games. So, like, you know, you'll be playing for, like, about an hour, and then a screen will pop up saying, would you like to pay, like, $1.25 for the next hour? Or some nonsense like that. However, like, this is kind of a huge cash grab for Nintendo, because these guys make a lot of freemium games, and they sell very well. So this is going to be a really big thing for Nintendo, because... you know, a lot of parents, you know, just allow their kids to play these games and will probably, you know, allow them to make a few purchases here and there. And like everyone has a smartphone and everyone has a smartphone game. So this is kind of a big deal because, you know, you recognize Mario and you recognize Donkey Kong and all those other Nintendo properties. So this is going to be awesome for Nintendo, financially speaking. I'm not going to buy any of them.
You know I gotta say, and this is almost sacrilege coming from an older gamer from the NES era, but there is a special corner of hell that is reserved for people who make freemium games that are geared toward children.
Yes, I wouldn't call that sacrilegious. I'd call that accurate.
Yeah, but to say that about Nintendo, like, I don't want to think of Nintendo as a company that is going to make my kid play a game and then really want me to give him $2 so he can keep playing. Because, like, kids don't have the defense mechanisms to understand what's behind them asking for money. They just want to keep playing the game. And so it makes me really sad when there's these pay-to-win kind of games for kids. I try really hard to steer my own child away from it. I really don't even care about content in games. I care about that.
Yeah,
like I'll let my kid play a violent game, whatever. But I don't want him playing games that are going to try to beat him out of money. Like that's not something that I can support.
It's not cool. It's not cool at all. But people do it anyway, and
it's profitable.
It is. It's very profitable. So, and Nintendo kind of needs a little bit of profitable ventures
now
because like what was it? The last report that I said that I read was they were behind like 3 billion yen or some sort. It was quite a large amount, and they kind of need something to get back on top. Even though, like, Nintendo still has enough money in the bank to last them for quite a few years. However, it's still sad to see them kind of fall behind because I love Nintendo, and I want to see them succeed.
Yeah. I mean, I do too. How could you not love Nintendo? Like, what's not to love? But
right.
Like, them going into making, licensing their characters for freemium games. I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I wonder if there'll be an option of like, if they'll release like Super Mario 3 for your iPhone and you can just pay $5 and download the game so your kid can play it. Like,
yeah,
that would be awesome. I would, if there's that option, okay, I'm down.
I would totally be okay with, like, having old school NES games on my phone, you know? Something like, you know, Super Mario Brothers 3 or, like, the original Metroid, something. Just any kind of old school NES game on my phone. I would be totally okay with that.
You know what I want? Oh, my God. I want Blades of Steel, except for I can play it with somebody who's not in the room. That's what I want. Blades of Steel is the game, man.
Okay.
Here, I'm going to totally date myself. I used to play Blades of Steel when I was in college. That's how old I am, all right? I used to play with my friend Mike DeLonzo, who's now an executive at Esquire TV. And I used to kick his ass, and I'm going to say that in public. You hear that, Mike DeLonzo? I'll beat you at Blades of Steel now. I beat you at Blades of Steel in the early 90s, and I'll still beat you. You hear that?
Well, with that declaration of awesomeness, let's move on to the next topic. So this isn't exactly like video game news, but it's kind of related. So I think it was Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day, that this trailer for a new Adam Sandler movie was released called Pixels. For some reason, mankind has launched a space probe out to the depths of space full of artifacts of our American culture, and they launched that in the 80s, and so like they had like a whole bunch of video games and like Rubik's Cubes and various other 80s paraphernalia that I'm sure, Steven, you will recognize.
I'm sure I will.
And so apparently the concept is that they took it the wrong way, so they developed the weapons to invade Earth, and yeah, so like there are space invaders and a giant Pac-Man that's like, you know, devouring and just destroying everything and turning it into pixels when they come back to Earth. So,
All right.
Yeah. So from the trailer, I saw that it was Adam Sandler, a few other comedians, and like Peter Dinklage, and the guy who created Pac-Man was a guest on the movie. So I don't know. It looks dumb. It looks really dumb. And I'm not going to watch it. So there's that.
But come on, it's an Adam Sandler movie. How could it be dumb?
I don't know. He was so good in Rain on Me.
He was fantastic. You know, he actually was really good in Punch Drunk Love. I don't know why he doesn't do more movies like that. But
that's neither here nor there.
It's really good. It's an art movie, you know, with stars Adam Sandler. And you'll be surprised. You'll be like, wow, he can actually act. Like, he's actually a good actor.
Yeah, totally. Like, I loved him in Rain on Me. But his comedies are just no good anymore. So
no, it's been a while too.
Yeah, and yeah, even his older comedies like Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison, they really haven't aged well, I don't think.
I agree with you, they haven't.
Yeah.
Although, so, like, this one sounds particularly, I mean, this is sounds so high concept that it's almost like it is, you can't talk about a movie that hasn't been made or released, I know. You shouldn't talk negatively because maybe it's going to be the greatest movie ever. But at the same time, it just sounds like one of those things that's all concept. And then the execution, what difference does it make? The poster will look good so people will go see it.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's too, and it also sounds like a lot of other movies.
Mm-hmm.
Where video games come into real life.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to talk about one with, what was his name, Emilio Estevez?
With Emilio Estevez. See, now I'm going to go into some of the old geek cred that I have, which is I am going to call reference to the movie Nightmares from 1983, which was an anthology horror film and one of the four, I think, films in it starred a very young Emilio Estevez as a gamer, and it was called The Bishop of Battle. It was about this video game, and it was like the coolest new video game, but there was this level that nobody could get to, the last level, and Emilio Estevez was so hot as a gamer that he got to the fabled 13th level, and it turns out, get this, what happens on the 13th level is the monsters in the video game become real. So Emilio Estevez has to fight the pixelated monsters in the arcade, in the Bishop of Battle. And the entire thing falls apart, and it's a terrible movie. But it's kind of awesome.
Oh, no.
And if you can, you should see Nightmares from
1983. Okay, so it's one of those, if you die in the game, you die in real life situations.
But, well, more that, because he doesn't go into the game. The game comes into the real world.
Yeah.
So if he dies in the real world, I guess he dies. I mean, like you do in the real world.
Yeah, can I just say something, though? Like, Whenever there's a movie that has, like, a fake video game that they invented just for the movie,
yeah,
it always sounds terrible. Bishop of Battle doesn't sound like a game that I want to play.
You know, I wish I could remember what happened in the actual game within the film.
Yeah, and, like, the original Tron, Flynn invented, created the game Space Paranoids, and it was basically Battlezone for the Atari 2600. But they called it Space Paranoids, and like that's just a terrible name. Like Hollywood knows nothing about like geek culture or gamer culture. Like in the movie Hackers, like that's nothing like what hacking is like.
At it from the Hollywood point of view, I mean. There's nothing less cinematic than hacking. Like they're just, and I feel maybe that's part of what's going on with video games is that, playing a video game is a visual experience, but telling a story about somebody playing video games is inherently boring because watching other people play video games isn't interesting, at least to me.
Yeah, and that's the thing though is like it's not going to make for a good movie. It's not going to be very entertaining. So, you know, it's. It's just something that they do.
Have there been any good movies about gamers? I can't even think of one off the top of my head, but there's got to be one.
I mean, there's been good documentaries about video gamers.
King of Kong was good.
King of Kong was really good. There was another game. There's another game movie called Free to Play, which was about the, I think, the 2012 or 2013 Dota 2 tournament.
Oh, that was really good. Check that out.
Yeah, that was really good. There was the indie game movie. Which was about that was really good. So I think that the people, you know, the players.
Oh, you know what?
Let me
give a quote to a friend of mine. Speaking of old geeks and documentaries about video games, if you get a chance, see the movie Get Lamp. It's directed by my pal Jason Scott, and it is about the prehistory of adventure games. Not the prehistory, but the beginnings of adventure games, text adventure games.
So really?
He tracks down a lot of the old dudes who wrote that stuff and puts it all into the larger context of gaming. It's a really interesting movie if you're into like the esoteria of geekdom, and that's definitely it. Text adventure games from the 70s and 80s.
No,
pretty rad if you like
it. I'm all about that, so I'll have to look into that.
Get Lamp.
All right. Awesome. All right. Now, I think that wraps up the news.
I think so too. Nintendo and Adam Sandler in the same.
Yep.
There you go.
Yep. So let's talk about the topic for today's episode, which is sequels.
Sequels.
Yeah. So I think, last week we talked about movies versus video games, which just kind of evolved into just games as art on the whole.
Right.
And that's I think, a valuable conversation to have.
Sure.
But one thing that... You know, we kind of see a lot from the major media industries are sequels. You know, we'll see it in movies. We'll see it in games, definitely games. But you don't kind of see it like with, I mean, there are series of books, but you don't see like a sequel to pieces of art or anything like that. So I don't know.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, it depends. Yeah. I mean, you know, TV's got sequels, I guess, like Better Call Saul. I don't know. They call them spinoffs on TV for
spin-offs
whatever reason.
Whatnot,
well, I guess, it's not really a sequel. It is a spinoff. There's a difference.
Yeah, there is a difference. But, games are kind of different in the way that they approach sequels, I feel, because, like, they always try to improve mechanically a lot on what the game did. Because, I don't know, like, I always notice that, like, I feel that the sequel is sometimes better than the original because they improve upon the mechanics, And things like that.
It's true. In many cases, the sequels are better than the originals. And I've noticed that when it comes to series, usually number three is the best. I don't know why that is, but that's what happens. The third one is the best.
I think that people are in love with trilogies because of Star Wars.
Yeah, it could be. But I mean, in games, like think about like Fallout 3 versus Fallout 2 and 1. Maybe that's kind of sacrilege to a lot of Fallout fans, but Fallout 3 is a great game.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto 3 versus the first two?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, like, that's another topic entirely, where, like, you know, game developers make the shift from 2D to 3D.
Right.
And I'd really like to talk about that, because I love that era of sort of, like, experimentation and exploration where, you know, they go from the 2D consoles to the 3D consoles, like the 64 and the Dreamcast. Like,
right.
I love those things, but that's unrelated. So for this week, I kind of assigned a homework topic, an assignment, which was like play an original game and play the sequel and sort of like compare and contrast. So what I did, I played Half-Life and Half-Life 2. And I played the first 2 hours of each game just to sort of like compare and contrast like the intro sequences, which I think is like a really good strong point for each game, like, you know, to basically it's like their thesis statement, and it's enough time to give me like a good impression of the game. So playing Half-Life versus Half-Life 2, there was a major difference, and I like, you couldn't even call them, I don't know, that's not entirely true, but they were so vastly different with the way that the game was structured.
Mm-hmm.
So the original Half-Life, the first 2 hours had me riding in a car, which was the intro sequence. Like, that's a really cool thing that wasn't really done in games before, where, like, you just kind of literally go along a track and, like, the opening credits would roll, and, like, that was cool. Like, I like seeing that. But then afterwards, like, you know, you open up the portal to another dimension or another planet, all these aliens come pouring through, and all these stupid things just keep on happening. And, yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool just to, like, walk throughout Black Mesa and, you know, just kind of be, like, a day in the life of Gordon Freeman as, you know, theoretical physicist or whatever.
Right.
And that was cool. And then once things start happening, you know, like, you pick up your crowbar and you start breaking boxes and smashing headcrabs and zombies and stuff like that, and then you get a gun, and you know, it's just sort of that progression. And then, like, there was a lot of platforming, which is interesting because it's a first-person shooter game, and platforming never really works, but there was a lot of jumping from platform to platform and sidling along edges that I shouldn't be able to move along.
Right.
Because, yeah. And it was just a lot of, like, complex sort of maneuvering in this game world and solving puzzles that I often got lost on because, I mean, like, this was the technological limitation, but a lot of stuff looked the same. I ended up crawling through a lot of vents, and that was kind of boring, and I got lost several times. By contrast, the sequel, Half-Life 2, again, had me riding in a train on a rail, opening credits, and then, like, once you step off of the train, immediately, like, you're just sort of, like, immersed into this world of City 17, like, the giant screen of Dr. Breen, and,
right.
Like, he's giving his whole spiel of, like, you know, the whole relocation of humanity, and, like, you really get the sense of what City 17 is, where Black Mesa was just, like, science! meanwhile, like, City 17, like, humanity is oppressed by these, you know, gas mask-wearing aliens, you know, and, like, they're just dicks, because, like, the one knocks over the soda can, is like, pick up that can, and I threw it at him, and then I ran, and, you know, and then, like, just more giant screens, very, you know, kind of Orwellian, with just, like, the huge sense of oppression that you get from this, you know, just... There's people wearing their jumpsuits and, like, their arms sort of crossed to keep it to themselves. And, like, I, again, like, it just really had a great presentation to it. And then soon you start running from the cops. Like, they start shooting at you. And then, like, you meet up with Alex. And then, you know, you do the teleporter experiment. And, like, there was so much that happened, so much more that happened within the 2 hours that I played in Half-Life 2 than I played in the original Half-Life. I think that was a really cool, like, transition. And there's a huge gap between the original Half-Life and Half-Life 2 that they had enough time to make, like, a different sort of a game, really. I mean, they definitely took their time with this, and yeah.
Right.
So what's a game or series of games that you've played where you've noticed, like, differences in whether improvement or just gameplay in general?
You know, this week I revisited Grand Theft Auto 4.
Okay.
To compare it to Grand Theft Auto 5.
Ah.
And I had forgotten how sort of dour and dark Grand Theft Auto 4 actually is.
Yeah, like, that game is ugly as sin.
The character, and yeah, the way it looks, and just the, I mean, the story itself is really just very serious and sort of heavy, and like I just totally, I really liked it when it came out, but it, I found it very difficult to sort of get into that story. I understand, like I appreciate what they were trying to do to make something a little more serious, but I. In retrospect, seems like it was a misstep compared to number five, where it seems like they changed the tone enough that that's the rock star that we want to see. Like, that's the way we want Rockstar to be, is like, it's got to be just a little bit larger than life, you know? It's,
yeah.
And I feel like four had touches of that, but not enough of it. And, right. You know, but the actual mechanics of the game and stuff like that, they're pretty similar. I mean, no huge I think that's one of those don't, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So they just kind of you know, improved. I think they improved the out of car combat a little bit, even though it's still sort of clunky.
Yeah,
you know, stuff like that, but generally it's the same. I mean, when you play Grand Theft Auto, you want to jack cars, you want to have missions where you shoot people. You really don't want any innovation in that sense. Right. We do want innovation, like, in the – which is, again, this is a mark of games improving and, you know, maturing, is the fact that for some series, you don't want the games to improve the – you don't want the mechanics of the game to improve. What you want is a different story and a different kind of story. And I feel like that's what they did with the latest Grand Theft Auto, which I think is fantastic, by the way. Like, what an awesome game that is.
Yeah, I really liked I really did like Grand Theft Auto 5. I thought that the driving mechanics worked a bit better. Like, it just felt kind of
Right. Yeah, the cars are cars do feel better. I meant to mention
I felt like the tires were actually made of rubber and they gripped to the road. I felt like the shooting mechanic was also improved. It felt a lot like Red Dead Redemption, but with fully automatic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that. And I think that was kind of like the era, because they made Grand Theft Auto 4, and then they made Red Dead Redemption, which I loved storytelling-wise, because I love John Marston, I love that character, and I love the story that he goes through. And that was I think that was kind of like a maturing of Rockstar in terms of their storytelling.
Right.
Because Grand Theft Auto 4, you said, was very dark, and I've played it, and it's very dark storytelling, and just visually, it really captured the tone of like things are bad.
And also another thing, difference between the sequels of 4 and 5 is that in 4, I don't know if it's because of the difference in geography, or a function of their design, but in 4 you really can't tell where you are ever. Every place looks the same. But in 5, you really can, and I don't know if that's because I'm from Los Angeles, but I recognize neighborhoods, and I don't even need a map. I know exactly where I'm going, and, you know, like because the neighborhoods look, much like real life, very different from one another. So you can tell where you are just by looking at the surroundings.
No, I totally get that. I don't live in Los Angeles. I've never really visited or explored very much, but in Grand Theft Auto 5's Los Santos, I definitely recognize like where I'm at, you know, and I know where like certain neighborhoods and certain areas are. Like, I can go there pretty much by memory. Though most of the time I just spend speeding down the highway because it's fun.
It's very cool to go to places that you actually go to. It's awesome to go to your neighbor. Like I used to live in Silver Lake when that game came out. I lived in Silver Lake, which is sort of hipster Los Angeles. Like, a lot of hipsters live there. And when you go to Los Santos version of Silver Lake, there's a lot of hipsters there. It was like, wow, this is so rad that they would get that.
Yeah. They really have a good attention to detail in the game. It's really surprising for how large it is. It's really
I know. Yeah. It's such an impressive technical thing or achievement. But then you also like you wonder, you know, I get that a lot of it is satire and a lot of it is intentionally over the top, but it is one of those games that gives me a little bit of pause. Maybe this is the old geek in me talking, but having a little bit of pause of like, really, should kids be sitting here playing this game all day? You know, like, it's a really negative message. Like, everything is so cynical in Rockstar's whole worldview is incredibly cynical. And I realized that, speaking of Rockstar and sequels, the Rockstar game I would love to see a sequel to is Bully. That's what I would like to see.
That's a game that I haven't touched because of its nature.
Oh, it's fantastic. You know? Don't let it. It's fantastic. It's okay. I mean, it's very different than other Rockstar games. Yeah. It's very tongue-in-cheek, but I would like to see more games set. And the reason I like it is because you're not a super soldier in space, and you're not like you're some other subject, which is, hey, this is a game about kids in a boarding school.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
And that's you know, a very mundane sort of thing, but, you know, that's something worth exploring as well. But, like, as far as, like, the content of GTA and just sort of that thing, I mean, like, it's rated M for a reason, but it does cross a few lines, and it does so willfully. Like, it definitely pushes the envelope, and it I don't think it's, you know, satire, cynical so much as just straight up offensive for the sake of being that, and that really bothers me, and I feel like it's just kind of lazy just to, like, say, here's a line, let's cross it and, you know, go as far as we can with it. It's I don't think it's very intelligent. I don't really like GTA for those reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love GTA 5 because it was a fun game to play, and I just loved exploring Los Santos, but that's, you know.
But that aspect of it you didn't like. I could see that.
Yeah.
You know, and also even apart from the argument, like completely apart from whether it's offensive or not offensive, honestly, it's a little played out.
Yeah.
It's a little old. And I say that as an old guy, but it's been done, Rockstar. I mean, we get it. We get it. Okay. Yeah. You know, like you're really offensive. Great. That's terrific. Mm-hmm. It's totally been done, and there's no reason to, like, it was innovative in the beginning, like Grand Theft Auto 3, amazingly innovative. All that stuff, both ideologically and technically, that game was more innovative than you can even, like, really comprehend if you didn't play it at the time. But now it's like, okay, like, we totally get it. Like, it's done. You played it out.
Yeah.
You finished it. You finished it, Rockstar. Now go do more Red Dead Redemptions.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. Although Red Dead Redemption, I really liked it as a game. Like, I loved playing it. But I also, you can see how derivative it is of specific older sources. Like, the opening shot of a car being delivered to the Old West.
Mm-hmm.
That is from... it's either from Once Upon a Time in the West or from another movie. I forget which one. But that shot is just lifted completely, 100%. Yeah. And it's such a powerful image. Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know. I guess you're putting it in a different context with a video game. So,
no, that's the thing. Like, cool. Red Dead Redemption aimed to be, like, the Western experience, and it definitely did. Like, I watched several Western movies because of Red Dead Redemption. I watched The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, Once Upon a Time in the Old West, was another one, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, and, like, there were quite a few similarities in, you know, Red Dead Redemption that they just copied straight up, and that was cool, and that was, you know, that was that. But to get back to sequels rather than just Rockstar games, Final Fantasy is a game series that I've never really gotten into.
Me neither.
And it's, I don't really like the storytelling of it. I don't like the characters of it. I don't really like the gameplay mechanics of it. But I do love that music, and it's very pretty to look at. However, those do not make for a great game. And I've frequently questioned how they've made it to now 15 plus titles. And this just blows me away. And the thing is, like, you know, from, like, Final Fantasy 3 or 6 in Japan, they've had, like, this ATB system, which never really made sense to me. But, you know, they've kept on with that, you know, Final Fantasy 7, Final Fantasy 8, Final Fantasy 9. They've had those same mechanics, and they've kind of changed it up now. 'Cause in 10... I really liked that. I really liked how 10 played, but I hated the characters and the story was just blah.
Right.
And then 11 was an MMO. 12 was an MMO, but it was offline. 13, you didn't even get to play the game. You just didn't get to play the game.
Oh, yeah, 13. I do remember. That was the one where somebody told me, who was a fan.
Yeah.
They were like, you should check this out. And I was like, I will. And they were like, okay, you know, just so you know, the first 15 or so hours are kind of boring. And I was like, the first 15 hours?
That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
That's,
I was like, acceptable. I don't think I'll play it. I did play it for a little bit to see what they meant. I played it for a couple hours and I was like, yep, it is boring.
Yeah.
He was right. That's not a lie.
I remember when I was writing for my college paper, I did a review of it, and like I was reading articles that were like, this is a 60-hour game on average, and my friend and co-worker for the paper is like, dude, we should marathon that this weekend. I ended up playing a majority of the game, and I was just pressing forward and pressing the A button, because like you just run down hallways and you do the auto battle system, which, you know, does all the experimentation for you and, you know, does all that stuff for you. You don't even get to play the game. It's really bad. And how do you even like learn from your past mistakes, continue to make a franchise and end up with that?
Well, because the thing is, I mean, there were people so many
Final Fantasy games. I mean, like, people like Final Fantasy, and that's all well and good, but this just is not a good game, and it spawned sequels and offshoots of Final Fantasy 13, and I just don't understand how something like that can even work.
Obviously, the people that do like it, and there are a lot of people that like Final Fantasy. I mean, they're getting something out of it. It's just something that you and I, they're getting something that you and I aren't looking for, and I don't know what that thing is. Like, I don't really understand it.
Neither do I. But to keep on the track with RPGs and other sequels, Mass Effect V, Mass Effect 2. I love those games. I freaking love Mass Effect all the time. And I think that there was a major improvement both mechanically and sort of like world. The universe of Mass Effect had really expanded from 1 to 2. Because I feel like, because Mass Effect, the original one, was rather sterile. It was very clean, and it was very introductory to the universe of Mass Effect. Like, these are the Asaris, these are the Krogans, these are the Turians, all that stuff. And like, okay, nice to meet you. And then, like, in Mass Effect 2, all of that sort of, like, clean veneer just tore away, and you were thrown into the seedy underbelly of the Mass Effect universe. And it did a great job of that by throwing you on Omega, sort of like the Mos Eisley of the Mass Effect universe.
Right.
And it was great because, like, you just meet all these different characters, like the cinematography, like with the camera angles of conversations that would go on, the animation, the dialogue, everything was improved. And that was just like in the story and presentation of it. I totally got lost so many times, willfully, mind you. Like, I just totally like lost myself in that universe, just running around Omega, running around the Citadel, just exploring these places and just talking and overhearing these conversations. It was amazing. Like, I love that. And then with the gameplay, it felt even better. You had better control of the you had better squad commands. Like, you could tell your people to go to like specific places. You could, you know, quick assign their abilities so that you could like quick hit them with the overload to take down the shields, and then like,
and all that stuff really worked too, which is kind of stuff surprising.
Totally worked. And you know, the leveling system was another mechanic that was sort of, I don't know if I would call it streamlined, but it was totally different from like the 37 slots of pistol mastery that you could do in the original Mass Effect, or like the 4 different slots which you had to save up for, because you, every time that you leveled up, you would get like 1 point, and then you can allocate that to wherever you want. But then the next level would be like, it would cost 2 points. So like the next 2 levels, like, you would save up, and then you would put that into the next slot. And then once you got to that final stage of the skill, you could make a choice between like one effect or another. And like that was a major decision, because like, they were drastically different, and that was so cool that you had to make that kind of decision both for your squad members and your character of Commander Shepard.
Right, and you couldn't go back, right?
Yeah, you couldn't. Well, you could. Could
you respec?
Yeah, you can respec. It just costs a lot of Element Zero, I think, which is so hard to find for some reason. But, I think that Mass Effect 2 is a really good example of a sequel. And how it really improves like every sort of aspect, except for the mining. But in some cases, I really enjoy the mining.
Yeah, I got sick of them. I stopped mining pretty quickly.
No, I liked it. I liked it because
are sequels killing games though? Are we not seeing innovative games because we got to put out another Call of Duty?
Yeah,
I said duty.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, there's definitely a flood of sequels. And that's a problem, because it does sort of cut off creativity. One of the, my favorite journalists, game journalist, Yahtzee, who does Zero Punctuation, he wants a rule to be made where there can't be any sequels. And I think that, like, you know, with all these different people in the video game industry, like, there are so many creative minds there. I don't feel like they're putting to they're being put to good use, because they're either being put to another Assassin's Creed or another Battlefield or Call of Duty. I don't know. I would love to see some of these AAA studios make something new. I just feel like it's kind of expected of video games to always have a new Assassin's Creed, a new Call of Duty, a new Pokemon. Because those are just sort of video games. I mean, those are like staples of video games.
It's also because the marketing, you know, like, I hate to get all cynical about it, but it costs a lot of money to market something, and it costs a lot less money to market something that people already know what it is.
Yeah.
It's the same in movies as it is in games. It's just a function of the recognizability of the title.
So yeah,
if people recognize
sure.
it, they're likely to buy it, and half of marketing's job is done.
Yeah.
So they'll keep milking all this stuff until it's no longer profitable.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a shame when art becomes a business.
Right.
Because these are creations by individuals, and
I didn't mean to interrupt you, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
But that's like one of the other arguments to get back onto last week's topic for a second for why games are not art is the intentionality of their creation.
You know,
because they say if you're making it for money, it is de facto not art. So
right.
With a capital A.
Yeah. Art. Yeah. But it's just kind of a mess, and I don't know, there are original games out there. And unfortunately, a lot of them are trying to get crowdfunding and often don't either get that goal or don't make the game or whatever they want to when they get that goal. So, it, like I said, it's just a mess.
Original games are kind of a mess, but I love when some original property comes out. And a lot of times they do great. Like you know, we were talking Red Dead Redemption again.
Yeah.
It was an original property, did really well.
Well, I mean, it was kind of a sequel to Red Dead Revolver.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right.
Red Dead Revolver was like a linear shooter, whereas Red Dead Redemption was an open world game.
I actually liked Red Dead Revolver quite a bit. There was sort of an open world section in it. It was weird. Mm. Like, there was a section where the world kind of opened up and you could pick different missions and go to different places, but it was only a piece of the game, not the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that game was, though, like, worlds less complex ideologically and technically than, I mean, it's such a leap forward. Speaking of sequels, between Red Dead Revolver and Red Dead Redemption, that I even forgot that Red Dead Revolver was, it did come along first, because it's so different that, you know, I don't know. But then that one you get, because that one, speaking of the marketing, is you just go, well, it's Grand Theft Auto in the Old West.
Yeah. But it wasn't.
I know, but that's like how a person could grasp and understand it.
Yeah.
Or some new concept, you got to spend a lot of money educating people on what it is and what it's about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when it comes to like an original concept, take a look at Minecraft.
That's true.
Call it like Wildfire, no ad campaign, just passed around via word of mouth.
Yeah, quality eventually will rise.
Yeah. So
there you go. Maybe, that's going to save the industry. Quality.
Yeah. maybe there's a lesson to be learned from that.
Right. Not that the industry needs saving. It seems to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, I'd say it's doing fine.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Hey, next week. Let's talk about next week, because it's going to be our very first
podcast. Oh, yeah. Our next episode.
Our first podcast with a guest.
Yeah, it'll be Old Geek, Young Geek, and Guest Geek.
That's true. Old Geek, Young Geek, Guest Geek, and the guest is going to be the great Nicole Zavalich. So
awesome.
She's sort of a gaming personality and an awesome person. And we're going to hang out with her and talk about games and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
Looking forward to it. So until next time, I'm Scott.
And I am Steve.
All right.
Cool.
Bye, everyone.
See you.
And if you like today's podcast, let us know. Send us a tweet at OldGeekYoungGeek on Twitter, or send us an email at OldGeekYoungGeek@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
I'm back, I'm cool, what's I represent a tier? On me, no ghost, no 16-bit like Sega Genesis. Archie Ball on the board, soundtrack on the track, Gemini on the job, Shelly G on the G, Seth Green for the green preacher, and I'm back on my thing for the listeners. What you